You know, I know that Sarah from previous conversations has a lot to say on the subject of FIDA and its progress so far. So maybe just to start with, you could give us your high-level view on you know, why the process has been a bit of a roller coaster so far, and how you see it panning out now in the context of the EU's simplification and process, and also maybe hand in hand also with other aspects of EU initiatives like the Savings and Investment Union, because all of these things are linked together. And simplification and competitiveness has also become a hot topic. So how has it got to where it is today, and how do you see it from a high level going forward now?
As FIDA is continuing from open banking and the PSD2, I see a lot of things repeating from open banking and from PSD2, and I also see a lot of learnings from PSD2. And I see how a lot of banks were very happy when they weren't forced to implement PSD2 because they could claim they don't have a payment account, whereas now they're getting forced to actually implement it, regardless of if they're a niche player having only funds or investment accounts, for example, or if they're a broader player offering a lot of different products that would fall under the FIDA regulation. And from that perspective, I can understand the different motions. I understand that the bigger banks are heavily lobbying against it, because for them it means a lot of new data categories that needs to get built. And a lot of the banks have built PSD2 platforms, API platforms, that are not capable of bringing in FIDA, meaning they need to do it all over again. And doing that kind of investment on every 5 or every 10 years, it's not something that a bank is used to. I think banking is one of the very, very few industries where you're actually opposing technology shifts, where you want to stay with the old technologies that you have in-house right now, mostly because you're so afraid about the spaghetti that you have down in the basement and how what the impact will be when you try to lift that up into a real time.
Yeah, it was interesting. Actually, in the previous panel, there was actually a bank that liked the idea of FIDA, but they are a new bank. They're pretty much a fintech bank. Mm. As you say, the legacy banks don't seem to... They've really pushed back against it. I think in the 20th of March, there was a letter to the EU that was signed by about 6 of the large industry associations, asking the EU to really rethink it. I know the EBA is currently also drafting its own specific letter asking for a complete rethink of FIDA. Mm. And I mean, having had sight of that through the committees that I'm on, there are some specific topics that we can maybe go through one by one. So the first, and I think you touched on it, is particularly maybe the legacy banks that are pushing back. They're asking for the data scope to be reduced. Mm. Having just seen your presentation and some of the use cases, I mean, I would say that is already counterproductive, because if you start reducing the scope of data, then you're reducing the use cases for it being of value. So
100%. It's counterproductive in that sense. But if you don't want to invest in the infrastructure to enable these personalized offers, then you're also never going to get to the personalized offers, unless you work with open banking, because that's one way of getting the transaction data out and then in again.
Yeah, I mean, in fact, I would say that FIDA is pushing from open banking to open financial services. Mm. It's not just about banking, and some of your use cases were not just about banking. Right, they're about any use case for that data. Mm. And I mean, you touched upon data, which has nothing to do with data, which is our localization. The other aspect that one of the other aspects they're pushing back on is not just the scope of the data, but they're also complaining about the amount of history that FIDA is currently demanding that the FIDE, as it's worded at the moment, is looking at 10 years.
Mm.
And I mean, I spent, I'll take a step back, because before coming back to Luxembourg in 2017, I spent 7 years in Africa, and where people like Safaricom, when they introduced M-Pesa, which everyone has heard of as being the mobile money of Kenya, they did it without regulation. The regulator had to catch up, but they did it not breaking any regulation either. And you know, I think you touched upon it too, that the financial services industry, for whatever reason, one of the things that they're also pushing back against the EU is that they say there's a lack of demand. But I think we've heard today that we're all demanding, actually, that this data is accessible and available. And I mean,
also that what banks are underestimating is the creativity of all the people who are working with it, creating new products.
Exactly. And that's what Safaricom did with M-Pesa. They created mobile money, a new product, but they did it with, they relied everything on customer consent. If you have the consent of the customer to share the data, then that's all you need.
Mm.
You don't need a whole pile of regulation around it. But going back to the 10 years, I mean, I also did a lot of work there around credit scoring and using alternative data like mobile usage to build up a profile of a person's behavior and therefore their credit risk. And what you see is actually, and probably more and more, with that actually you don't need 10 years of data. So my question to you is, yes, FIDE, at the moment the wording is 10 years of data. The banks want it to push to maximum 5 years and maybe even less. Do you think the history is important?
Of everything that I dream about when it comes to FIDE and everything that I would like to get out of the regulation, as a business, as a person, and from if I look from the value perspective of what we might get out of FIDE, the use cases, I don't see any case, and feel free to challenge me on this one, but I haven't seen one case yet where 10 years is a necessity in comparison to 5 years. If it's an investment investment account, then it's sufficient to see five years back of that performance. If it's an insurance, it's more than enough to see 5 years back. If it's a loan or a mortgage, 5 years should be sufficient.
So you would give them that one?
Absolutely.
In return for something else, you would give
them that. I think that'd be the easiest point to negotiate around, right?
Right.
Yeah. It's an easy pointer to give, because I know how big that step is for the bank building it and how much effort they would need to put in, and then how little value it actually, additional value those five additional 5 years would actually bring. So
And plenty of new players haven't even been around that time, so...
Then I'd be happy to say that if FIDE is actually coming into force at, let's say, 27, and then you have 5 years back, so 22 to 27, feel free to then extend 2022 so that when we have 2032, then we have the 10 years. That'd be a very fair compromise in that sense, because then the banks need to lift up 5 years of data, not 10 years. But then they're additionally building on top of it. That'd be a fine road in the middle.
Another area that that the EBA, in any case, is proposing is this gradual approach, and they're thinking very much around products. So I mean, we already have payment accounts with PSD2 and PSD3 coming, and you know, they've basically defined the next products in the gradual approach. Of course, they're pushing the more complex ones in their eyes further and further down the line. But again, I mean, surely this is counterproductive. That the gradual approach should maybe be more about the scope of the schema, because when we all go into our mobile apps and look at information, it's actually quite a small subset of information that is important to us. So you could have that small subset of information for all the products. So maybe What's your thinking on this gradual approach? Should it be more focused on the amount or breadth of data for each product, or should it be a product approach where the more complex products are pushed further out?
It's also a very good question, and I see a lot of comparisons and similarities with open banking on this one as well, because with the first product of API, the first AIS version, the product AIS 1.0, the first launch, that didn't contain a lot of content. It didn't contain a lot of data, meaning that regardless of what we bring out, the version that we get from the banks on the product 1.0 is never going to be a perfect product. But it's going to be a starting point for something that is then evolving into what we have right now with open banking, with most of the banks where the APIs are really working well and the customers are getting a lot. Customers, regardless of if it's a business or a consumer, they're getting a lot of real value out of it. And I see the same is going to happen with, when you look at it from the FIDA perspective, that regardless of what we get as the first version, use cases are going to be very limited. But as they evolve, more use cases are becoming possible.
Do you see, as I was saying, do you see an opportunity for the really innovative financial services institutions to actually get ahead of the gradual approach too, if they want to, as long as they're not breaking any regulation, as long as they have the customer consent to do what they want to do? Do you see some of your use cases are kind of in that direction? They're not covered specifically by any regulation in terms of the use of the data, but they're not breaking any either.
No, I mean, every company in Europe is covered by GDPR. As a basic regulation on how to treat the data and how to work with the data. We have a lot of other laws as well in EU regulating that part on how should you be working with transaction data and what is important when you work with data overall. So that's as we have very high standards in EU. And the same I see with FIDA, with Open Finance, that's once we get that data, we're going to have the same standards already from open banking. We learned a lot already from open banking. And there's a lot of, how should I put it, the industry has been maturing from angry fintechs 10 years ago saying, we're going to eat you banks, into collaborative approaches today. Not killing industries, but changing industries.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this morning has been about data and trust. And I mean, you're a consumer of financial services, we all are. I think one of the key things about trust is I'm much more likely to trust what I see in my app and the institution that's providing it if it is real time and it is continuous. Now, this is another thing that they're pushing back on. They want the real time to be removed and they want the continuous to be qualified. What's your view on that? I mean, for me, that's basically saying, well, we don't want you to trust us because we can't give it to you continuously in real time.
It's a really good pointer. And I think that most of people are so used with how banking has been working. And we have to remember that banks have been around for hundreds of years and their main job has been to protect. Initially, it was about protecting the physical money, and then it turned into protecting the digital money. And now there's been a huge mindset shift in most of the bankers where they're going from keeping, protecting, into sharing. So the mindset shift on that one is huge. And now that mindset shift is hitting verticals in banking that has never seen sharing before, that doesn't think that sharing is caring, that doesn't see that, oh, I need to share this data, I can lose a lot, instead of seeing the opportunity part of, wait a minute, I have to share this data, but sharing this data would also enable me to create new products. It would enable me to find new business lines, to personalize solutions to my customers, like Backbase spoke about this morning. It's going to make it possible to take a lot of these different products that we have today, that is the one size fits all, where all of them are done for everyone. And you have all the content in the banking apps, regardless of if you only have one product. We're going to see that personalized view in the future, I'm sure of it.
And then extending that that theme of trust, there's the famous dashboard. And again, here the EBA in its draft letter, it's only draft, it's not anything else yet, but they're suggesting that the dashboard should just be somewhere the customer can go, not to actually change or define the permissions, but where they can just visualize the permission they've already given or are giving, and that the permissioning process should be something outside the dashboard. Because banks are used to sending you pieces of paper, so you signing the pieces of paper and then coming back again and going through a whole process, and they don't want it in the dashboard. But again, for me, this is an extension of trust. If I can see in real time, continuously, all of my decisions that I've made, and I can change them. So, I mean,
I find that brilliant.
Yeah.
That part is something I really, really look forward to get that overview of with whom have I shared this account and this information. I'm coming back to the location data, because often you get notifications from your iPhone, at least I do, when they tell me that you've given access to this app to share your location. And is this something you want to continue? I appreciate that. Because sometimes I realize that I've given access to something that I wanted to do one time, but it's not necessarily something that I need to do for a long time. And then that goes. Exactly the same thing with the dashboards. It's going to be brilliant when you have that visibility and overview so that you can make the choice yourself. What do I want to do with my data?
Absolutely. I agree with you. So which actually leads me, because I think we're demonstrating there's demand. I think all this morning we've heard actually there is demand. So for me, that is a completely flawed argument that is being pushed back to the EU.
But isn't it reminding a bit to the episodes of House of Cards?
Yeah.
I think back to February when it suddenly came into the room that was just at the same time of Stockholm FinTech Week. And then we got a notification that FIDA is off the table. And then suddenly the day after, FIDA is on the table again. And now we have the lobbying letters from all the associations who are stating their perspective. And we have the counter-lobbying activities ongoing as well. So there's a lot of artificial forces moving this. And there's a lot of, I think there's a lot of both career-benefiting moves that are being made. There's a lot of short-sightedness that is being done, because if you see the shift where you need to come, or the technology shift that lies behind what you need to do when you become compliant, either to open banking or to FIDA, that technology shift is also enabling other solutions. And it's enabling each and every company to build new products and to really take advantage of both the streams of data that could build and create new products, and it's also enabling your existing products to become real-time products.
For sure. I mean, it's unfortunate too that probably the institutions that are struggling the most with, and we heard it also this morning, with the legacy platforms are the big institutions. With all due respect to our friend Citi, who was up on the stage, they're probably one of them. But I think, you know, my final question to you really then, based on what you've just said too, is that, you know, FIDA, open banking, open financial services, FIDA, they are really there to create opportunities and value. And as you said, hopefully in 10 years' time, we'll be standing here and really seeing that value, maybe even earlier, I hope. But I know this industry has never moved as quickly as you think. If you were the EU, would you be listening to all of this lobbying from the legacy institutions? Or would you just say, no, we're going to stick to our guns. We think it's the right thing to do. And we're going to select it's going to be survival of the fittest. The fittest will win because the consumers will come to them because they're providing value. What would you do as the EU? I hope you're not on one of their committees.
If I had the opportunity to make the decision, I would make it the gradual approach. I would not make the CSR selection live or die, but to make it in different phases. Give the banks first the 18 months that they're expected to, and then on some products that are more complex, let's say 24. But what I would demand as EU is, what is your roadmap? What is your implementation plan? How do you want to get to the end goal? Not saying, no, you don't need to, because if we're not pushing FIDA, the only thing that we're going to get is the second wave of screen scraping or reverse engineering. And then we're going to have a lot of fintechs getting a lot of funding, building a big companies based on screen scraping. And screen scraping is, in that sense, not optimal, because the consumer doesn't have the control of the data, yeah, which they have with APIs. The company doesn't have the control of the data, which they have with the APIs. The bank is not in control of the data that is being shared or has any overview. So there is no dashboard, there's nothing on the screen scraping side. The customer, the end customer, gets somewhat value from the provider, but they're not in control of their data in the same way that it would be with FIDA. So in that sense, for me, FIDA is a no-go, because I'm not interested in getting the big second wave of screen scraping. And I know there are, both in Finland and in Holland, you're not allowed to do any screen scraping, but in countries like Sweden, there's a lot of companies still doing screen scraping, and they're producing great products by doing it. But it's not in the long timeline with what we see, what EU would want. Because let's face it, one of the main reasons to why PSD2 was put onto the table, beyond the technology updates, etc., that was needed, and that they wanted to push innovation, was that they wanted to make sure that they get rid of screen scraping.
So in conclusion, definitely stick with FIDA, but
let's not
compromise on a gradual approach.
I would say there's no doubt that it should be done. And it's always going to be the question around, and that's going to be an endless debate, how would it get done? And then it's the question, what is most complex and what is easy? What can be done and what cannot be done? But that's already happened with PSD2. And if you look at it, PSD2 will always have been a much tougher journey for the bank, because one, they're doing it for the first time. They've never done it before, that mindset shift. Now many of them already have the infrastructure that they can continue building on top on. And most importantly, we already have the mindset of the people.
I think you're right in the retail banking space, but I'm not so convinced that they've been through this pain yet in, for example, investment banking and private banking. And you know, there's a lot of, on the investment side, that they've not gone through this pain at all. And this is what's scaring them. Anyway, thank you so much.